Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else.
This is The Stinking Truth.
Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, guys. Welcome in Stinking Truth Podcast. Mike Evans, Mark Schlereth, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Thank you so much for subscribing and sharing and doing all those things, man. Like I've said before, we are growing like a weed, so it's all you guys, so we appreciate that. Mike, how are you, buddy?
Good, good. You have a good Easter?
Had a great Easter.
Yeah.
Had a great Easter. A lot of food. We had two. So we went over to our neighbor's house, who had like a 1:30 Easter celebration. And then packed up, went and got my grandkids from the airport. My daughter-in-law came back to our house, and we had like a 5 o'clock Easter dinner. So, two Easter dinners.
You're a man. You are a stud.
Yes, yes.
Just a wagon.
Yeah, that's right. Spent a little time in the bathroom this morning, but...
Oh, jeez.
What? I mean, it was a post-Easter...
Okay.
Yeah, post-Easter...
Okay.
...evacuation.
Let's get into football talk, okay?
Okay, great. All right,
that's
great.
What people are here for.
All right.
Not your toilet adventures.
Yes.
This had to be... magic to your ears, magic words to your ears. When Jim Harbaugh last week was asked, you know, what's most important
in how to build
a football team,
build a roster.
And he talked about the offensive line.
Gosh.
Oh, that's like.
Dude, it was awesome. It was because he said, like, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said essentially goes, the O-line is the only group that's not reliant on another group to be good, for them to be good. Which, when you think about it, it is the most, it's the truest statement. And I love this. Like, if your O-line is good, then your receiving core can be good. If your O-line is good, then your running game can be good, your running backs. If your O-line is good, then your quarterback has an opportunity to be good. But if they're not good, your receiving core, your quarterback, and your running game is not going to be good. So they're the only ones that operate independently. Every other group relies on the O-line to be able to play and be good. And, you know, I say this all the time. This is why I love the intricacies of playing offensive line. And, you know, ultimately, as a whole, as a group, we are the worst athletes on the field. And there's no arguing that. I mean, collectively, as a group, we're the worst athletes on the field. And you think about transitional skill. So I've seen a cornerback transition to safety. I've seen a safety transition to outside linebacker. An outside linebacker transition to a defensive end. DN transition to a D-tackle. A D-tackle transition to an offensive lineman. You know what the transition from offensive line is? You go from O-line to fan. That's the transition. There is no place else to go. It's officer and a gentleman. I got nowhere else to go.
Right.
And so you think about that. You think about offensive line play in general. That's the last rung on the ladder, right? But it is the backbone of any organization. Because it's got to be good. If it's not good, your offense can't be good. And here's, like, for me, here's the crazy thing. Tell me another position in football where the worst athlete is expected to win 100% of the battles that that athlete goes against better athletes. So every time you line up, the guy across from you is about the same size, weight, strength, but he is exponentially better athletically than you, or at least, you know, at least pretty close,
right?
At least, for the most part, almost 100% of the time, is a better athlete.
Especially now, today, yeah, more and more.
Right.
Aaron Donald, stop it.
Okay, but at the closest, you're like athletes.
Right.
Let's say that. Like the extremely athletic center or guard, like Jason Kelce, at least, Jason Kelce would be an equitable matchup when it comes to athleticism, okay? But for the most part, you're always overmatched. Show me one other sport where the lesser athlete is expected to win 100% of the battle. So, like, NBA-wise, if you get caught up in a switch and Jokic, the MVP, goes against a guard who blows by him and takes it to the 10 and lays it up, you don't say, get that bum out of there. He can't play defense. You're like, hey, man, they got him on a matchup. But I always say this. I could go 65 plays in a row where I whip your ass in a game. Just whip your ass 65 plays in a row. The end of a game in a critical situation, I give up a sack, you're going to the Pro Bowl, and I'm a piece of shit. That's the game that we play. And so for Jim Harbaugh to recognize, hey, man, I'm building a franchise. I'll let Mike Williams leave. I'll let Keenan Allen leave. I'll let these guys leave because you know what I'm doing? I'm building a franchise, and I'm building an organization that is about winning championships. And I've got a quarterback, but my quarterback hasn't been properly supported with the things that, to me, are the backbone of an organization.
So
I absolutely love it.
So do you? Because having had this discussion, it seems obvious that Jim Harbaugh is taking an offensive lineman, and he'll be able to have his pick of the offensive lineman at number 5, because quarterbacks might go 1 through 4.
Yeah.
Do you automatically see him going offensive line? Because plenty of people would love to see, especially with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams gone,
yeah,
that he needs to go get a receiver for Justin Herbert.
Right.
So if he takes a wide receiver instead of an offensive lineman, doesn't that kind of blow up your whole theory?
No, my theory is 100% correct. but like there are opportunities to do a lot of different things. I could see them, you know, with all the run on quarterbacks, and they don't need one. With all the run that's going to be on quarterbacks, I could easily see them trading out of that. What, they have the 5th overall pick,
right? Trade back
yeah, and try to accumulate picks. So I don't know what they're going to do. But again, if you're looking at the draft and draft strategy in general, and you see like the neighbor's kid out of LSU being a, let's say you rate him at a 9.2, and you know your next the best offensive lineman rates at an 8.3. Like, does it make sense to do that? I don't know. But I don't know what their draft strategy is. But what he is saying is 100% true. And, you know, I got the opportunity to come into the National Football League and be mentored by the Hogs. And Joe Gibbs used to say it. He'd say it till he was blue in the face. The backbone of our football team is our offensive line. Make no bones about it. There's a reason that Joe Gibbs won 3 Super Bowls with 3 different starting quarterbacks. And it was because of that.
Well, I'm sure you would love to talk about offensive line for this entire podcast. And I'm sure.
And I think most fans are here for it.
I'm sure that all of you would love to hear nonstop offensive line talk, or would you rather talk about quarterbacks? Let's talk about quarterbacks.
Oh, my gosh.
The fun position.
Yeah.
Explain this one to me.
Okay.
Okay. How is it that Michael Penix is going into last week is viewed as a second round at best quarterback?
Yeah, late first, early second type.
Okay. Then he runs a 40 time that is good enough that immediately he now is absolutely a first-round quarterback and maybe even goes as high as number 12. Can you explain to me why he runs a sub-4.5 40 and all of a sudden that's enough to move him up solidly into the first round, where if he had run a 4.7 40?
Yeah.
He would have stayed in the second round?
Right.
Can you explain that to me?
Yes. Yes, I can. I can explain exactly
Please
that.
Please do, because I don't get it.
Okay. But I can explain it by saying this. NFL personnel people are stupid. That's what I mean, that's all it says to you is NFL personnel people are idiots. If you think that running a 4-5, by the way, it's a guy in Michael Penix that ran, scrambled for the sum total of 8 yards last season. 8 yards. And yet here he is running a 4-5 and he's elevated himself into the top 15 of the draft. And it just goes to show you how much of a box checking. Oof, backwards. That's my dyslexia.
Yeah.
How much of a box checking organization the National Football League is? Because he ran a 4-5 or 4-4-6 or whatever it was. Did his film get better? Did all of a sudden, you know, you go back and look and go, wow, what a great throw that was. I didn't recognize that before when I thought he was a 4-7-8 guy. But now that he's a 4-5 guy, that throw looks a hell of a lot better. Like, at what point? Here's the deal with the NFL. You know, all these guys, all these personnel people, even coaches, they go to these ridiculous, just these stupid, you know, pro days. And all of a sudden, they check a few boxes, and the personnel people say, oh, look at this. He ran the 4-5. He had a 36.5-inch vertical jump. He did this. He did that. You know, and all of a sudden, we'll elevate him here. Now, if you can't make him a player, if he doesn't become a player, not my fault. I check this box. I check that box. I check this one, and I check this one. So it's your fault as a coach. You're the one that sucks, and that's why you're going to get fired in 2 years, and I'm going to retain my job because he fit all the parameters we're looking for in a quarterback. That 4-5 means absolutely jack shit to me. It means nothing. I don't care. I don't care if he ran a 4-3. It makes no difference to me, and it's amazing. Now, maybe Michael Penix will be great. And, you know, he could be. The odds are, based upon the history of drafting quarterbacks in the National Football League, he won't be. And here's the other thing that blows me away. Because you get these strategists. Draft a quarterback, any quarterback. Just take one. They're all the same, right? They're first rounders. I mean, you saw it in last year's playoffs. Of the 8 quarterbacks in the divisional round of the playoffs, 7 of them were first rounders. This just proves that you got to have one of the... No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Because there's a ton of guys that are absolute busts. And by the way, 2 of those 8, not named Brock Purdy, were Baker Mayfield on his 4th team and Jared Goff, a guy that got dumped after going to a Super Bowl and pushed over to Detroit because his head coach, Sean McVay, said in his mind he can't win a championship. So the bottom line is that whole narrative was faulty. But the one that kills me, Mike, from these draft a quarterback, any quarterback, you know, draft expert gurus is, and you get the 5th-year option. Well, that 5th-year option.
Please destroy that myth for me.
How
please.
Valuable is that 5th-year option? If you're worth a squirt of piss, you will never see the 5th year. If you're worth a squirt of piss, after 3 years, you're going to get renegotiated, and you're going to get a long-term deal. If you get to the 4th or 5th year, you know what they're saying? We don't got anybody better, but we're certainly not putting a ring on your finger because we don't think you're worth anything. We don't think you're the guy that'll lead us in the future. So the 5th-round option is this fantasy land to make you feel better about taking a guy. It doesn't work. If you get to the 5th year, we don't want you. You're not the guy.
It's the ultimate kick the can down the road for one more year option. One more.
Let's see if this year, all of a sudden, he figures it out.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's just, at that point, teams have decided. They already know. But they're looking around going, how are we going to find somebody who's better? What's it going to cost us? We might as well just go down the road one more year with this guy, and then we'll address it.
Yeah, and you know, and we've seen guys like Daniel Jones. You think the Giants truly believe in Daniel Jones?
No.
Do you think the Arizona Cardinals feel like Kyler Murray is going to lead them to a championship type of? Absolutely not.
No.
But they got so nervous about dipping into the draft again, they got so nervous about dipping into, you know, not having somebody, that they signed those guys to contracts that ultimately they'd love to be out of. I would not be surprised at all if the Giants drafted a quarterback. Wouldn't shock me in the least. Because the year that Daniel Jones had success, Brian Daboll's first year, if you look at that year, you know what Daniel Jones became? He became a RPO, zone read, run the quarterback 12 times a game quarterback. He became an off-schedule quarterback. On schedule, from the pocket, he has proven that he is not the guy. He's just not. And so, and ultimately, Brian Daboll, you know, I know Daniel Jones tore his ACL this year, but Brian Daboll tried to morph back into more traditional style. And you know what happened? Daniel Jones ain't that guy.
Does Brian Daboll want that headache? Does he want the quarterback controversy that's inevitably going to come from drafting a guy, what, sixth overall? Does he want that headache?
I don't,
because like, you're going to be paying Daniel Jones, and everyone's going to be clamoring for the kid.
Do you want to coach a guy that ultimately you don't feel like can pass the confetti test? That you know that, yeah. Hey, man, we got to coach our asses off. We got to be good everywhere else. Because you can make excuses for Daniel Jones. You can sit there and say our O-line hasn't been good, and you know this, that, and the other haven't been good, and our receivers can't stay healthy, and they drop too many balls. And you know you can go through that game. You can play that game. But ultimately, Mike, don't you feel like Daniel Jones ain't going to get you over the top? Ultimately, don't you feel like you and I had this conversation about what's a franchise quarterback versus a starting quarterback versus an elite quarterback? And if you're a franchise quarterback, in my mind, and we went round and round on this. We've had this discussion. If you're a franchise quarterback, you might not be elite. You might not be, you know, in that Aaron Rodgers slash, you know, Patrick Mahomes slash, like, you may not be in that at that level. But if you're a franchise quarterback, at the very minimum, you have to be able to erase warts. You got to be compound W. You got to cover them warts. And if you can't cover one of your team's warts, you're not a franchise quarterback. You're a starter, but you're not a franchise guy. You've got to be able to cover a few warts, because the way the league works, you're always going to have a spot or two that you're not great at, that you've got to be able to cover up, and your quarterback has to do that.
You know my opinion. If I'm Arizona, if I'm the Giants, you took the swing at Daniel Jones and Kyler Murray. You can't be convinced that they're the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be willing to dip back into that pool again. And if it ruffles some feathers, and if it means that Daniel Jones and a Kyler Murray are put on notice, oh well.
Right.
Too bad.
If they stomp their feet and say, that's it, you got to trade me. All right.
See ya.
See you around sometime. Yeah. Hope it works out for you.
Go out there. Show us what your value is.
Yeah.
Come back to us. And we'll gladly make a deal work for you.
Well, we know what the value of those quarterbacks are now, right?
Right. I mean,
you got a six-rounder for
Justin Fields.
For Justin Fields.
Yep.
What do you think you're getting for Kyler Murray?
Right. Just goes back to the whole idea that, because I hear this all the time, the argument is that you got to be willing to swing for the fences. Mm-hmm. You got to be willing to be aggressive and go after a quarterback. Okay, fine.
Great.
Fine. I don't necessarily endorse that, but I'll play along with you. But why does that stop once you've drafted that quarterback who we all know isn't the long-term answer?
Right, who ain't the guy.
Why don't you go swing again, right?
Right.
But instead it seems to be more like, well, let's give this guy another year, or we don't want to create undue competition, have him looking over. Why? It's the most important position in sports. Why are you worried about hurting feelings?
Right. And I think that everybody, like players just know. And players just know whether a guy can play or not. And whether that guy is the dude. You know, you got to have some dude in you. Right? You just got to have something. There's got to be something about you that just inspires people, or you know, that people just believe in. And I personally just don't know, like either of those guys we just talked about, does anything about those guys you look at and go, yeah, that's the dude I want to follow?
Right.
You know, I always say, hey, man, you know, if you're in a leadership position, turn around and look over your shoulder. If nobody's actually following you, you're probably not doing a very good job of leading your team. And I would venture to guess that they don't got a lot of people that are lined up behind them.
You ready for some questions for the listeners?
Yeah, you
bet. The viewers? Here you go. Here's one from, all my teams lose in heartbreaking fashion. Who would you prefer, Mark, Josh Allen or Justin Herbert as your quarterback?
That's a great question. Because both the guys, I think, have the potential to be great. I know that Justin Herbert hasn't won anything yet, but when you sit down with him and talk football, he just has a way about him of making the game really simple for him. And then I look at the Chargers and I think about just the mismanagement of the football team, and think to myself, like, is that Herbert's fault? But Josh Allen's just got balls. Like, he just is, like, he's got some I don't give a crap mentality that I.
But see, that answer.
I'm drawn to.
So you're saying Allen?
Yeah.
See, that answer surprises me. And I'll tell you why. Because the one thing I've gotten from our conversations about quarterback play is you want that guy that just is in complete control, runs the offense, like a finely tuned watch, and just slices and dices in a very almost methodical, assassin-like way, where I would think that Herbert might exhibit more of those traits, whereas Allen is the gunslinger, which is fun. Gunslingers are fun, but gunslingers make mistakes, too.
Right.
They're a bit unpredictable. It seems to me that you like a little bit more predictability when you're looking at your franchise quarterback. Right. And I would think that Herbert has more of that potential predictability to be great than Allen does.
I think they both have some of that. But, you know, I stood in a huddle waiting for John Elway to come in. And there was a bit of that cavalier, down 14, we got them right where we want them, screw them, let's go. There was a part of that, just that athletic arrogance that I feel like Josh has.
But where was Elway at in his career when he finally won Super Bowls?
He was
more system quarterback.
But he still had that up yours attitude. Like I'll never forget, we had played some preseason game or something. It wasn't very good, right? It wasn't great. And Mike Shanahan was like going to bring us in on a Sunday. And Sunday is your day off. You know, you play on Saturday. And he wanted us to come in Sunday and want us to practice. And John was like, hey, you can call practice. Like in front of him, you can call practice on Sunday. I guarantee you one guy who won't be there. That's me. And it was like, we're like, oh shit. And yeah, and then it was just done. Like, okay, we'll see you guys Monday. But
now that's a high boo rating.
Right, that is right. That's balls over opponent.
Balls over opponent.
Yeah.
That's a high boo rating right there.
I mean, I'm embellishing a little bit, but he wanted to do a practice and John just said, I ain't showing up. I don't think he did in front of everybody, but there was a few guys here was like, yeah, fat chance. Like, you can have it, but you're doing it with a backup quarterback. So, like, but, like, Josh has got some of that in him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you got to be able to orchestrate from the pocket. You've got to be able to play from the pocket. You've got to be on schedule. But when push comes to shove, you got to have a dude that can make a play, too.
And I guess the biggest question surrounding Herbert is, does he have that dude in him? I mean, you take.
I think he does. If
you took,
but
maybe if you took Justin Herbert and Josh Allen, combined them, holy smokes!
Right.
You know. But that's a tough one. That's a good question.
It's a great question.
Good question.
Yes, good question.
Here's another one for you. Mark, is Jerry Jones making a mistake pushing all his chips in for 1 year? A little background, Mike McCarthy going into the final year of his contract. They hired Mike Zimmer as their defensive coordinator, one-year deal. Dak Prescott's got 1 year deal left. It's pretty obvious. Jerry's like, okay, show me. Show me what you got. Is that a mistake?
I think it at the very least it is with your quarterback. And again, you know, it's interesting because it depends on how you view Dak Prescott. And I think Dak Prescott plays with this old soul about him. I think he's incredibly accurate. I think he's he was an MVP candidate all season long last year. Mm-hmm. Guy's an all-pro court. I mean, he played. His numbers are ridiculous. But again, it just goes to show the dysfunctionality of the Dallas Cowboys. If you didn't think that Mike McCarthy was the guy to lead you into the future, then why didn't you go get the guy to lead you in the future? If you don't think he's worth, like, what are you going to do? It's championship or bust, apparently. But basically what you're saying as the owner, and this is my issue with the Cowboys, is I think it's a lot more about organizational structure than I do about the quarterback that you've got playing. I think that ultimately you never empower people, and therefore your organization, when it becomes nut-cutting time, your organization falls apart. So ultimately, if you're a player on that team right now, okay, and last year Jerry Jones made a trade for Trey Lance during the season or during the preseason or whatever it was, guy that was not dressing as your third quarterback, but you made a trade and Mike McCarthy came in the locker room that day and did not know that you traded for that guy. And now you're basically saying to Mike McCarthy, you're on a one-year deal, win a championship or bust. Let me ask you this. As a player, put yourself in that locker room. You're a player. What kind of authority does Mike McCarthy have?
Well, if Dak's connected with McCarthy and Dak's playing for a supper too, then doesn't that send a pretty clear message to everybody in the room?
I'm just asking you, if you're a player there and you know Mike McCarthy is on a one-year deal and you know it's championship or bust, mm-hmm. and you know what your organization has been and the circus that it often is, and the fact that players are like, man, you can't even walk out to practice without you're in a fishbowl. You're like a zoo. You're like your zoo creature that people come to see that he may stay. Like,
I get what you're saying, that it implies it creates a lame duck type situation, whereas why should I listen to you?
Right.
But if Dak's connected with that, and Dak also is on basically a one-year show me deal, then if I'm a player there, I'm going about my business with the understanding we are all in a one-year prove it mode.
Well, every player is in a one-year prove it mode,
even more
essentially. But when I know the coach has no authority over me, and I know the coach has not been empowered, and I know that this scapegoat, if we don't win, won't be me, it'll be we don't have the right guy, then when push comes to shove and when the going gets tough, ain't my fault, you end up developing an organization of finger pointers. And what's the old saying in the NFL? I don't want people who point the finger. I want people who pull the thumb. I want responsibility takers. And ultimately, you create an organization. This is why I think the Cowboys, I think under Jerry, they're just not going to win. Because you create an organization of finger pointers. You create an organization of guys who don't take responsibility. It's the old saying in the NFL is availability is the number one ability. Bullshit. Responsibility is the number one ability. That's what sets you apart from winning. And I know I'm going to get some people on the on the line there, you know, some people that reach out to us on the podcast go, oh, you're an old head and you don't understand new football. I'll tell you what I do understand. I understand championships. I know what it takes to win a championship. Unlike some of you youngsters who think it's just about throwing the ball on every down, it doesn't work that way, right? You got to have some balls. You got to be able to control the line of scrimmage. You got to have some backbone to you. And you got to have a group that will take responsibility. And not just punt it off on my lame duck coach, my one-year coach, my one-year quarterback. You've created an organization that doesn't take responsibility. And ultimately, that is your fault as an owner slash general manager slash grand poobah of all things football. And don't prove me wrong. I've been saying it for the last 15 years. Prove me wrong. You can't, because I'm right.
Boom.
There it is.
Mic drop.
Yeah. Hey, for everybody involved in the Stinking Truth podcast, we appreciate you guys. Love answering some of your questions, even you that are snarky. Bring it on. And, oh, by the way, I brought my sunglasses here just in case I decided to, you know, pull a Russ and work out during my video.
Give me some push-ups.
I'll do some high knees right here. Who am I? Hey, everybody involved in the Stinking Truth podcast. Yeah. We thank you so much. Oh, guys. Thank you so much for listening, for being a part of it. And we will be back with you later on in the week.